Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the WTF One That Time When podcast. My name's Matt, and joining me once again in this wonderful Google Hangout, other conference calls services are available, is Dan Thorne and Tom Bellingham, two of my favourite people to be wearing headphones right now.
Hello.
Are you wearing headphones, Tommy? Because I can't actually see you.
Yeah, I am. I've got a little headset on.
And I can see Dan because he's got his camera on, but for some reason, Tommy, you don't want to. Is it because you're naked?
Yeah.
Okay, well, perfect.
I am too, but...
yeah, no, I didn't want to mention that, but now that you've said it. You're in your wonderful racing seat as well, which a few terrible things have happened recently in that, but we won't go into that. for people that don't know, long story short, Dan pooed himself in his
that did happen.
Racing rig. Anyway, today we are going to be talking about that time when Right, let's start that again. So anyway, moving on. Today we're going to be talking about that time when a Nigerian prince owned an F1 team. Who chose this one? Who was the culprit behind this story?
Daniel.
That was me. Ooh, have I done something
Daniel?
Wrong? Yeah.
Full name.
Full named.
Daniel Kevin Thorne?
Kenneth.
Close.
God, you should know that by now. You've worked together for like at least 50 years.
Yeah.
Jeez, what's wrong with you? Anyway, Dan, give me a reason as to why you chose this story, just as a quick overview.
Firstly, because it's quite a funny thing to have happened. And secondly, because I know both me and Tommy absolutely love the Arrows team. And it's a good excuse to talk about them.
Perfect. Beautiful. Right. So a little bit different story today. It's not so much about the actual racing action of a particular race, but the fact that the Arrows team had a very unusual investor. Let's put it that way. So let's look back to the Arrows team history. Obviously, Tommy and Dan, you're both very much more suited to talk about it than I am. But just as an overview, they were founded in 1977 and they first raced in 1978. But their first car was ruled illegal by the courts. Why was that?
So basically the team was set up by a load of people who used to be part of the Shadow team, which was quite prominent in the 70s. So they went across and started Arrows, and the name Arrows is sort of like a loose sort of collection of the initials of the people who started it. The first car they built was basically exactly the same as the Shadow. And if you go online and look up images of the Arrows FA1 and the Shadow DN9, they do very clearly look almost identical, which is really strange at a time when F1 cars all looked incredibly different. But that's the thing, they kind of knew that they were going to get done for it. So even before they were told they had to build a new car, they built another car. So kind of begs the question why they copied it in the first place. But they did over half a season with the copy sort of thing before they came
in
with
copied it. And the fact that it was illegal, is it because essentially, you know, Racing Point obviously are going through the same sort of thing now, but is it because Arrows had the documents and everything and that's why it was illegal, because they genuinely were just building the car that they already knew?
I think it was the guy that designed the Shadow then went to Arrows and basically designed the same car for the new team. So it was kind of it was designed under Shadow, so it was kind of their intellectual property. So even though it was the same guy who did it, you know, they couldn't class it as their own car, sort of thing.
Interesting stuff. So if we look towards their notable moments that they had up until 1999, they had initially quite strong results between 78 and 81. They had a pretty cool engine name as well. Care to express, share this bit of knowledge?
Riccardo Patrese, sort of his early career was with Arrows, and he got a number of podiums for the team. He took pole at Long Beach in 1981, and might have, it was challenging for the win until his car broke down. And then sort of things went a little bit lean in the sort of mid 80s, but then they got BMW engines during the turbo era. But then when BMW withdrew, they couldn't use the BMW name, so they were rebadged as Megatron. So for 2 years, you had Arrows Megatron on the grid, which if that's not the coolest F1 sort of team name, I don't know what is.
It sounds like,
some Transformers stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
Or like when you get those kind of like fake F1 games where they don't have the licensing, and you have to they make up like names for the engines and stuff. And they're like, oh, this is powered by Megatron.
Megatron or Giga Speed.
Yeah.
So the footwork years I've got down in my notes, what exactly do we mean by that?
So the team sort of got invested in by a Japanese logistics company, basically. And the team was rebranded for most of the early and mid-90s as Footwork. But it was still the same team. So sort of like you'd have now with Racing Point and Force India. But it's slightly odd because the Footwork years, I think, are still generally counted as the same sort of team stats as Arrows.
I found that quite confusing, actually, because when I first started watching F1, I think it was the last year of Footwork, but they still very much were the same team. But then also they've always been Arrows, but then I guess they changed their name for a sponsor, and then when that sponsor left, they changed it back.
Yeah, I think they were still called Footwork Arrows as well, like in official sort of FIA entry list. So it was still Arrows rather than different owners. It was just a sponsorship deal that meant they had a different name.
And the final notable moment, which I think we should only leave to one man, that's the founder of WTF1, Tom Bellingham. Just Damon Hill, just in general, just Damon Hill was a notable moment of the Arrows team.
Yeah, a weird one, I guess, because Damon Hill had won the world championship in 1996, and normally, you know, you win a world championship and you will probably either carry on in that team or potentially go to a big team. And Damon Hill had essentially nowhere to go and ended up joining Arrows. So he went from world champion and ended up taking the number one to this team that were used to barely scoring any points in Formula One at all. And then they lined up in 1997 with, you know, the number one on their car because Damon was driving. And yeah, started off disastrously because they were absolutely terrible. But I think we have maybe done a few podcasts on the 97 season where we talk about Bridgestone sometimes would just be absolutely quality, because this is back when there was a tire war. And there was a notable race, which is too painful to talk about, which was the Hungarian Grand Prix in 1997, where Damon Hill was leading the race by about 40 seconds or something in an Arrows with the most unbelievable drive. And then his gearbox failed on the last lap and he got overtaken and finished second. Yeah.
I'll always remember that in scenario mode on an F1 game. I think it was one of the 90s.
It was F1 World Grand Prix on the N64. You could do, you could actually play that scenario. That was cool.
I remember playing that.
Is that why your webcam's off, Tommy, so we can't see you wiping away the tears recalling that event?
Yeah, it's too emotional.
Sad times. We're going to quickly put our beloved That Time When on pause for a moment to chat about our sponsor for this podcast, and they're becoming a regular at this point. It's Babbel, the app that can help you learn a language really easily. Lessons are created by 100 language experts, rather than the really bad Google Translate, which I used to use all the time to scrape my GCSE French grade. These are made by real people. The app itself has a clear and simple interface, guiding you through your learning journey in a funny and smooth way. It doesn't take much time up at all either, with daily 10 to 15 minute lessons. Right now, Babbel is offering you, our listeners, 6 months free with a purchase of a 6 month subscription with promo code WTF1. Go to babbel.co.uk/play and use promo code WTF1 on your 6 month subscription. That's babbel.co.uk/play, promo code WTF1. Now let's get back to that time when. So looking towards the 1999 season, the team were struggling financially. Tom Walkinshaw tried to sell the team but failed, and the team then got a new co-owner promising investment. How did that then unfold?
Yeah, so this is where the Nigerian prince comes in, which, as I'm sure many of you, I don't think it's so popular now, but I feel like in the mid-2000s, it was almost a daily thing to get an email from someone claiming to be a Nigerian prince. And all you had to do was pay him like a couple of grand, and he'd give you $6 million once he got access to his bank account.
It's a pretty good exchange, right? A lot of people got rich off that.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was a common scam. It's the scam to end all email scams, I think. So yeah, it's kind of funny when you think, oh, okay, a Nigerian prince invested in an F1 team. Like, that sounds legit. And it wasn't.
Yeah, you've even put prince in inverted commas.
Yeah, that's, well, because basically he was a Nigerian prince, but it's not like being Prince Harry or something like that. There are probably literally hundreds of princes in Nigeria because of the way the royalty system worked. Anyone could sort of declare themselves to be a king of their own land and their children would be a prince. So it didn't really mean anything significant.
Right. It's not like they were in with a lot of money that they could just...
No.
...drop at any point. So Prince Malik Ado Ibrahim, as you say, claimed to be a Nigerian prince and had a mysterious background. Now, as I look at this, rich energy is just coming straight towards me, not because that William Story was a prince, but just in terms of this random investor that you wouldn't expect just coming out of nowhere and making ridiculous claims. So there was the similarities with that, right?
Yep. He said he'd been privately educated in England, but there was no sort of record of where he'd been privately educated.
He was just educating privately. He didn't need
Yeah.
just on his own.
He said he wanted to be as famous as Eddie Jordan. So he hired a PR company to sort of big him up and make him into this big character. Because I think he was attracted to F1 by the sort of Flavio Briatore, Eddie Jordan type thing, where you just become known as a business mogul without sort of really thinking about how you get to become a business mogul. But the best thing was, he said he'd raced a Lamborghini at Le Mans under an alias, but there is literally no evidence that he did that. So it was just a flat out lie, basically.
What was his alias? Did he ever say? Did he ever say?
No. It's just that it was in sort of like the early to mid 90s. So
could be anyone.
Incredible. Literally anybody. As he was backed by Morgan Grenfell Bank, and he planned to raise money via his T-minus brand. What exactly did that entail? What was that brand that he had?
It's funny that you mentioned Rich Energy, because I had no idea. I remember it being on the car, but I had a quick look into it, and I found an article on Vice Sports that was talking about this this Nigerian prince. And a direct quote from it is, T-minus planned to make money by launching an energy drink.
Wow.
as well as selling rebranded products such as clothing and motorcycles. So he really does sound like the William Story of his day.
Yeah.
Maybe William Story is
inspired by
the Nigerian prince. Maybe it's him.
Maybe it is him. I don't think it's him.
No. So if we look to the reality of the situation, obviously we've teed up this very mysterious thing going on with the investment of the team. And surprise, the money never came through.
No.
I imagine is quite big for a Formula One team to not receive money.
Yeah, I mean, the amount that was apparently promised to Arrows was $125 million, which would be massive now. So in the late 90s, that's like probably getting on towards the budget of a top team. So
did the F1 team send $2,000 and then the exchange was almost done?
Yeah, so you think, oh, that's a lot of money. They could probably get a couple of top drivers. So that should have been like the first clue, is that despite this apparent investment they were getting, they had Pedro de la Rosa, who was a good driver, but still came with a lot of backing, which is, you know, helpful to a small team. And Tora Takagi, who was also pretty much just a pay driver. And the car was not good. De La Rosa scored a point on his debut in Australia, but that was the only point they scored all year. The money never came through. And by the end of the season, they'd parted ways, and the logos weren't on the car anymore for the last couple of races.
I looked into the results actually from 1999, when you mentioned that the team had a terrible season. And yeah, I saw that the only point they had was the first race. But they finished sixth and seventh in the first race. And I was like, oh, wow, how did they do that? And only eight cars finished.
So it wasn't like they were there on pace
in
Australia.
No, no.
The car looked good, exploded. Though. Yeah, good reliability. So if we look then towards, as you said, everything disappeared. Malik disappeared late in the season. The logos went, and obviously the team very much in dire straits at this point. And the demise of Arrows begun, really. They had a couple more okay seasons, but they never really recovered from not just this investor pulling out, but I guess no real investors coming in either. And, you know, they were always on the back foot from there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like they did better in the seasons after that with Verstappen and De La Rosa and then Bernoldi. But yeah, the writing was sort of on the wall. F1 was starting to really get expensive and small teams were struggling. And, you know, they did their best, I guess. But in halfway through 2002, they ran out of money and then tried to enter the following year, but were banned by the FIA because, you know, they just weren't a serious F1 outfit anymore.
I've got a sad story for you. So I was at the 2002 French Grand Prix, head to toe in Orange Arrow stuff. My dad was head to toe in Orange Arrow stuff, and they didn't even. I think they came out the pits for one lap, maybe in practice, and then announced that that's it, we're done. So I actually watched them essentially go under in that race.
Oh no!
Sad times.
That's horrible. How did you ever really recover?
I know. It's sad.
I don't think he has.
I can still sense the disappointment. That's why you're now backing Red Bull and Max Verstappen, because you know that you won't ever get hurt like you did last time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Even worse is that they Arrows finished up their career and now have the unenviable record of the most races entered by a team that hasn't won a race. They've got 394 race entries and no wins.
I was going to say, when we look at actually how long they were around for, it's a pretty hefty amount of time for what was obviously towards the end where they were really, really struggling. So, yeah, right. So that's pretty much it, apart from actually looking at the livery of it. You reckon, I mean, Tommy, you're quite a big fan of that car's livery.
Yeah, I mean, they were sponsored by, this was after the money never came from the Nigerian Prince. I mean, they were sponsored by Repsol, weren't they, that season? So they had this sort of like half and half orange and black car.
That was awesome.
Then the year after was the kind of famous Orange Arrows. And yeah, to be fair, that livery is responsible for our branding, WTF1 being black and orange and white because of that car. So
shocking.
Yeah.
Not
a fanboy.
You stole the
just
idea.
Passionate.
Yeah. WTF1 stealing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Arrows liveries. I mean, my favourite one is the 98 car, which was terrible, but the car was just black with like white sponsors, and it just looks so, so good.
A bit like Renault, I guess, in testing Renault that everyone loves.
And the one with Hill was a good livery as well. In the 80s, they had some really odd liveries. They had like a beige car. Like, why would you have a beige F1 car? Then they started out with these awesome gold Warsteiner liveries, gold and black, which just looked so good. So I was sort of wondering, like, of all the F1 teams, does Arrows have one of the best livery histories?
I mean, you're asking the wrong guy here with Tommy.
Yeah, he's
really
clearly biased.
Of course he's going to back it.
Even as someone that's massively biased, I will say that Jordan and Benetton have got to be in the mix.
So I think they're the three.
Yeah, fair. I'd go with that.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people have opinions as well, so make sure you share it using the hashtag WTF1podcast. And we will, and obviously tag WTF1official as well. We'll see all your opinions. What other best liveries are there out there? Maybe from the past, maybe from the present. We will have a look at your opinions. Right, finally, let's just end on Prince Malik, who came out of the shadows a little bit and returned to motorsport in NASCAR in the mid-2000s. And lo and behold, he got arrested for fraud in 2008 and more allegations of fraud in 2010. And he now currently works for a Nigerian energy company.
Yep.
Does he send out emails asking for our bank account details? Or
I don't know. I haven't checked in the last 10 minutes, so I'm not too sure. But yeah, strange guy.
A dodgy man. Very dodgy.
Yeah, he wasn't convicted.
He's on Twitter. He is on Twitter. I did a little Google search and of his name, and a Twitter page came up, which looks kind of a little bit fake and a very dodgy profile picture, which made me believe it's probably him.
Malik Ido Ibrahim. Oh yeah, real.
He's got like 100 followers, Malik, but it is.
It's at real Malik Ado. Wow. He shared a YouTube video.
Like one of those people that goes, it's like in the spam emails where they say, this is not a scam, I promise.
His latest tweet is sharing a YouTube video that doesn't exist anymore. So interesting man.
Yeah.
But good job he's not in motorsport anymore, because we don't want that kind of thing happening to any other teams, do we really?
No.
Right, that pretty much wraps up today's podcast, That Time When podcast. Hopefully we won't be seeing any more Nigerian princes that are dodgy in Formula One or any other motorsport anytime soon. Thank you so much to Tommy and Dan for joining me along in this remote working adventure. How are we enjoying it so far, guys?
Business as usual.
Yeah. One week in, we're absolutely flying, right?
I don't like going out.
No, to be fair, I've said this many times. I've been in training for this for 27 years, so I'm very much doing okay. But obviously, missing being able to watch Formula One, but we'll be doing some more stuff if you guys are still listening, you know, and watching our stuff. We'll be trying to interact with you guys as much as possible through gaming and remote working as far as we can. So thank you so much for listening. Make sure you check out our other That Time When podcast. We've done many, so as much as we are trying to get as much content out as possible, also check out the ones we've already released if you haven't already. Give us 5 stars as well for whatever platform you're listening on, and any suggestions for future content, then hashtag WTF1podcast. Perfect, guys. Thank you so much, Dan, Tommy. See you soon, maybe, probably not. See you in June, maybe when the lockdown's over. Maybe lockdown will go to the end of the year. I don't know. But I miss you guys.
Yeah.
Right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for watching. Cheers. Listening. Not for watching. Thanks for watching our audio. Bye.
Bye.
Good Bovril.
Bye, Bovril.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.